This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. This is Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Innovative thoughts from baseball's best coaching minds from around the world. Brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. Now your host, former USA Baseball National Team Coach, Peter Caliendo.
Baseball Outside the Box, another great show, another great day. Hope you're all doing well. This is a show that loves to interview baseball's best coaching minds who love the challenge, the status quo. And we have one of the best here today, Ron Washington. I'm not going to go through all his background, but you all know him. He is a former major league manager, player, but also now the third base coach with the Atlanta Braves, one of the best in the business when it comes to infield, but not just that. Let me tell you, I spent a week in Italy with him. My wife and I, we did a clinic in Italy for coaches, over 300 to 400 of them. Outstanding. Just spending the week with him, I became the most positive person in the world, because you talk about positivity, there is no word negative in Ron Washington's vocabulary. So let me welcome right away and let's just get rolling and get started, because you're going to really love this. Let me welcome Ron Washington. Ron, I really appreciate this, man. How you doing?
I'm doing well, Pete, and it's my pleasure, and thanks for that introduction.
Hey, I don't even know why I ask you how you're doing, because I know how you're doing. You're always positive, and here's a great place to start. And then we'll take questions from our people.
So I'm not going to go into the entire interview, but no, it is not Ron Washington. It is Pete Caliendo, and I'm going to bring him in. Let's see if he's coming in the room here. Should be. Coach, are you there?
Justin, I am here. Hang on, let me get my video. My apologies. How you doing, everybody?
Now, all I could say is we've had a lot of guests, and that for professional development, very fortunate to have great guests like Coach Pete Caliendo, who I'm about to give a quick introduction, but probably the best Zoom background by far. Look at Coach Pete Caliendo's. Look at that baseball man cave. That is unbelievable. So before I hand it over to Coach, I wrote a couple things down, but I basically just want to tell you, Coach Pete Caliendo is an absolute gem in the game of baseball. I mean, he's been coaching for over 35, 40 years almost. Coached all over the world, has instructed with academies in Cuba, Japan. Is that right, Coach?
Right.
Japan. Were you just in the Ukraine?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So anyone in the game of baseball that has been involved in the game of baseball knows Coach Pete Caliendo. He's an absolute gem. Actually, he has a phenomenal podcast, as you just saw, who had, tremendous guests. There was Bo Porter on. I watched that one. Professional baseball players, coaches all over the world. Just a pure gem, tremendous amount of wealth of knowledge, and I would say truly one of the kings of instruction in the world. I mean, I'm really going on a limb by saying that, but it's the truth. And, frankly, we connected through the pandemic, and he asked me to be on his podcast, which I was honored. I'll share it with you, later or whatever, if you guys want to check it out. But he's just an absolute gem, and we're so fortunate to have him here tonight. He was, gracious to bring his time here or whatever to share some wisdom. So without further ado, Coach, I'm going to hand it over to you. Just thank you so much for being here.
Justin, thank you, and thank everybody for joining us. All the things he says, because of the 39 years, the more you stay in the game, the more good things happen. And I've been extremely fortunate because of the fact that I've had some great mentors. Hopefully you guys all have great mentors that you have that help you along the way. I know I've had a ton of them. Some have passed away, but one thing, I never forget them, because they were always there. There's no way that I would be able to do the things that I've done around the world. First of all, it wasn't for my parents, obviously, being Italian. And by the way, I'm having an espresso for you guys because I need it. It's been a long day. But because of that, you know, not only my parents, but obviously, you know, coaches along the way and all that, and you kind of learn from everybody and kind of, you know, simulate what you think is some good things that, you know, can help kids. So first of all, I just want to thank everybody for being on. Second, I want to thank you, and I do this with all the coaches I talk to because I think it's so important. Justin mentioned the age group that you guys are working with, and I realize you've worked with different age groups, but when you're working with, you know, 5 to 9 year olds, to me, that's how I learned to develop the background of instruction development and how to work with young kids, because I really feel that if you've worked with that age group, man, you can work with any age group. And just like all of you, I've been lucky to work with young kids, you know, high school, college, pros, former pros, big league guys. And one thing I learned, that all of them want to learn. It doesn't matter what level, and they all want to get better. And if you're there for them and you make them realize that you care about them, I think you realize that, you know, they're going to listen. And I remember, and I'll tell you real quick, when I remember my first time I started independent ball. I was in independent ball for about 10 years. And one of the things, you know, I was with Team USA. So I was with a lot of the best players at 16, you know, 14 and even 12. But at the same time, when I got to independent ball, I was a little scared because I've never been with pro guys. And I was like, man, I'm going to be with pro guys. Well, how am I going to handle that? And what I realized is that they're no different than the 5 and 9 year olds. They make mistakes. They're human. They want to learn. They want to get better. So again, commend you for what you're doing with that age group, because I realize, one, it's not an easy age group, but at the same time, it could be a lot of fun. And I always tell our coaches, put yourself in their shoes. And what would you want to do if you're them? You know, if you have a practice or if you're working on instruction, you know, how would you want somebody to work with you at that age group? If they had no coaches, what would they like to do? So I kind of formulate that a little bit. And obviously we have a game plan. We want to help them get better. But, you know, we also realize that, you know, at that age group, we're going to influence them a great deal. Now, you know the statistics. By the time they get to about 13, things start to change, 13, 14. Some will drop out. And I don't believe the excuse that they drop out because of other sports or technology or other things that they're going to be doing. I've always believed that they love the game of baseball and they love their coaches, and the coaches are doing a great job and they've done a great job at the younger levels. They're going to continue to play the game no matter what, because they're having fun. They're not going to drop out. I realize some may drop out because of competition, a little tougher as you get older, and maybe, you know, guys and gals will drop out at a certain age. But so I really believe that, and I've talked about this a lot, the foundation of our sport, not only in the U.S. but around the world, is the younger kids. That's the development of our young kids. If we do that properly, boy, they can really develop into real good players in the future. A lot of the mistakes and injuries, and I know you realize this, and some of the things I'm going to tell you, you know, you already know, a lot of the things that happen when they're young develop when they're older. So, you know, these injuries that we're seeing a lot of times at older age groups, those injuries didn't occur at the big league level or at the high school or college level. They started somewhere along the way, right, when they were younger, especially in the throwing aspect. So if we're doing something incorrectly and we're not correcting them properly, that could create an injury down the road. And that's why I think our responsibility is so important with this age group. You know, again, I realize you work with the young kids. You know, what I'd like to do in a few minutes here, I really like to make this a little interactive, because I think if we can interact and ask questions or even suggest comments, I think that's how you learn, right? We got a lot of experience here, a lot of different coaches, different ages. And when you put it all together, man, I think you could learn from everybody. I have learned, and I know it may sound great, but it's true. I've learned from young kids. It's amazing when you ask questions, sometimes the answers they give you, and then you start thinking, man, you know, maybe this 12-year-old's right. That's a good thing, what he just said. Maybe we need to change something. So in a few minutes, I'll mention a few things, and then in a few minutes, let's open it up. Let's have some fun with a discussion. I think that's the best way to handle something like this. And Justin, you know, tell me if you want to get into something now, you know, another avenue, just mention it, and now we'll go into that. I just wrote down a couple notes. First thing is, you hear this all the time. You hear, you know, make sure you have fun, right? And then you go to a practice, and the practice doesn't look that much fun. It doesn't look fun at all. Now, why is fun so important? One, I don't know about you, but when I was in school, man, if the teacher was boring, I wasn't very good at listening. Okay. And we always say, you got to listen, right? Pay attention. Well, I think it's our responsibility when we have real young kids to figure out how we're going to keep their attention. You know, how we're going to get them to learn. And simple things like, I'll give you a quick example. You know, coaches use the excuse sometimes, well, my kids don't hustle. You know, I tell them, but they won't hustle. Well, hustle, everybody says everybody can do it. You've heard this comment before, right? Anybody can hustle. In some ways, that's true, right? You can hustle because it doesn't take a skill. It just takes determination. Just do it all the time, right? Hustle on and off the field, you know, hustle to your next station, all that kind of stuff. But do we train our kids to do that? Because it has to really become a habit, doesn't it? Hustle is a habit also. It's not just we tell them and they're just going to do it. It's not that easy. It's not like you're in Japan. If you're in Japan, you say hustle, boom, they're gone. They go. Why? Because they created that atmosphere, that culture early when they were young. I mean, it started with the parents, right? And we realized that, you know, sometimes, you know, parenting is tough. And sometimes parents don't do the best all the time. So sometimes they expect us to do it. But at the same time, it's kind of a dual relationship here because you need the parents on board also. So when we talk about fun, when I say hustle, I'll ask the kids, you know, why do you think you need to hustle? Why do you need to run each station? I'll ask them questions and I give them baseball cards for the answers, right? I'll give them a baseball card if they answer the question because now they get excited. Oh, but I get something. Baseball cards are cheap. We'll have them. I use that as an incentive too because it's fun to, you know, if they don't hustle sometimes, if I pick a particular kid's not hustling, I may take that card back that he just won a little while ago because now I realize that it's not just a gift, but you got to earn it. And they love that kind of stuff because, you know, when you're 5, 6 years old, man, you wanna have that interaction with your coach. So I use the baseball cards and I also use it for, like, you know, sometimes you have all levels. Some kids aren't going to be as good as others, right? Everybody's got different abilities. I mean, we're talking about 5, 6, 7, 8 year olds, even 12 and 13 year olds have different abilities depending on when they were born, depending on their size, right? We never know where these kids are going to develop. So I'll pick a young man that's really hustling, really trying, and I'll make it a point in front of everybody, say, hey, John, fantastic. I love the way you hustle. Boom, here's two cards. That wakes up the other kids right away, man. They all want to go. What are we really doing? We're tricking them into that hustle habit. And that's what I'm trying to do all the time. I'll have a little game with them. I'll say, okay, here's positions, right? I'll give them numbers. Most of the kids don't even know at that age what position numbers are, right? 1, 2, 3 different positions. So I'll point them out. I'll tell them the numbers. I'll give them the positions, what they represent. I'll say, okay, ready, go. And they got to run to that spot. We might get 4 kids at second base the first time. We'll come back, you know, we'll go over the numbers again. And that's a way for me to get them to understand and to trick them again into hustling on and off the field. Little things like how they put their equipment, man, even if they're 6, 7 years old, where are you going to put your equipment? Where's your glove going to go? Where's your bat going to go? We start with that a little bit. How do you break in the glove? A lot of kids, what do they do with their glove? They'll take it and they'll throw it, right? They'll throw it in the dugout or throw it, you know, and we ask them, why do you want to throw your glove? You know, that's part of what you're going to need to catch the baseball with. You want that to be a great, great thing so you can catch it easier. What do we do with that glove? We turn it inside out when they don't use it. Why do we turn it inside out? Because catching a baseball, there's a lot of fear. Well, a lot of the gloves are closed, right? They're flat. Well, if you turn it inside out, now it stays open a lot better. So again, we're just creating different things for them to understand, to get better at, but also we're also moving fast doing it. We're not standing still. We're moving around. You know, one of the toughest things, as you know, for these young kids is to play catch, right? There's a fear factor involved. And I'm sure you all do this, but I start with a warm-up where every young person, 5, 6, 7 years old, doesn't matter, whether it's a baseball, and what we found for the really young kids, we use beanbags to start off with. Why do we use beanbags? Because they form better in your hand. They're easy to catch. So we give them all the beanbag, all the tennis ball, depending on the age, depending on the skill level, how they're doing, whatever. And we'll have different warm-ups. Our warm-ups are real simple. You're going to take the ball in the beanbag and you're going to throw it up in the air and you're going to catch it on your own, because now we're working on the skill, right? Working on how we're going to catch that object. and they're doing it individually. Because a lot of times if we throw it up for them, we don't know the height yet that they're accustomed to, that they're comfortable with, because they got to get to a comfortable position to build up to there. So now they get to do that. And then we'll do it, you know, I might do it 4 or 5 times and I'll stop and say, okay, was that easy? And, you know, and I'll have them answer me. Was it easy? Yeah, it was easy. Okay. If it was easy, then what are you going to do now to develop a better skill? Some kids are pretty smart. They'll say, I'm going to throw it higher. Great. Then throw it higher. Right. And now we throw it higher. Now they're catching. And now we add in the footwork too. We tell them, okay, now try it. Let everybody run forward, run around the field. Doesn't matter. Run around, throw it up. Just throw it up in here as you're running. What are we developing? We're developing skills, athletic skills. We're developing hand-eye coordination. We're developing movement. They don't even know it because what? If you don't say stop, they'll keep doing it. Because what? It's fun. They enjoy it. These are things that we actually do that actually work. And I'm sure if you've done it, fantastic. If you haven't, maybe you pick something up. As we're doing this, we're gonna go right. We're gonna go left. We're gonna go backwards. We're gonna make them move their feet real fast in place and throw it up in the air. Again, kids love action. They love movement. They don't want to stand still, and they don't want to listen to people talking. So if we can incorporate all those at the same time, maybe mentioning some things, boy, they again, what are we doing? We're having fun with them. The reason we're moving our feet fast is because they've got to learn a little bit about what? Not jumping up and down as you're doing that. Move your feet, but keep your body in a good position so you can see the object really well. We'll have them run backwards. That's a big problem, right? With young kids, they got to develop some movement backwards. That's real tough. We're developing their backward movement, forward movement, sideways. We'll pair them up and let them run around and just throw the beanbag to each other. We'll go in circles and we'll toss the beanbag back and forth, or the tennis ball or a real ball, again, depending on the age. We may go in reverse circles and toss that around. We'll go 2 baseballs. Now it gets real interesting, or 2 beanbags, because in fact, now they've got to say toss. One of them's going to say toss, right? So now you got communication skills in there. And again, they don't realize they're doing those type of things. So when I hear somebody say fun, I expect those type of things, and I expect less standing around, a lot of movement, and we've got to be creative, right? We got to plan that. And luckily, my plan is in my head because I've been doing it a long time. Your plan may be in your head also. You may not have to write things down because you've got a pretty good idea where you want to go. The other part I also try to accomplish with the young kids is we're talking about 5 to 9 year olds, right? So swinging a bat for a 5 to 9 year old is not easy. First of all, my opinion, they ought to have the lightest object in their hands first before they swing an actual bat, right? They ought to have a broomstick, a wiffle ball bat, anything lighter, light as possible. Because what happens, and again, my experience has been, when you got that light object in your hands, wow, now the body's controlling the object, right? So now the body can kind of control the swing a little bit. Then later on, as they get comfortable, you can put the heavier object in because now the body understands what the movements are. But there's another step that we use I think is important. When they swing an object, especially a heavy object like a bat, because no matter what, I don't care what bat you give them, I think you'll agree with me, all bats are heavy for these kids, no matter what, right? Just like the ball. The ball's too big, too heavy. Their body's too weak, so they have trouble with the backside weakness. Every kid has backside weakness, and not only kids, but high school kids. And when you have backside weakness, you know, you're talking about trying to get your elbows to a certain level. Well, that's not easy if your backside's weak and the ball's too heavy. And then we know the ball's too heavy. That's a fact. That's why the Japanese have gone to a lighter ball. They have trouble gripping the ball. Yes, we tell them, you know, go ahead and grip it with 3 fingers, right? I know you guys do that. Or sometimes they might have to grip it with 4 fingers. But we understand that the thumb needs to be underneath because that needs to center the ball. So that way, at least they got a chance to throw it straight. And even then, they're gonna release the ball incorrectly because the ball's too big. So when I go back to hitting, we make them freeze and we challenge them a little bit. Okay, take your best swing as fast as you can, but when you're done, freeze. Now, why are we doing that? We're doing that because we keep saying that balance is so important in the swing. Well, now if we challenge them to keep their balance, but we don't restrict them from taking a quick swing. We don't want to slow their swing down unless what? Unless you're working on a particular skill to understand it, then we might slow it down. But now we're going to swing fast, hold our swing just for a second. try to balance. Now, they're not going to be able to do that right away. So now what? You got a challenge, right? That's a challenge. And kids love challenges. So now all of a sudden they're trying to do it. They're falling. Okay, do it again, right? And now we're swinging again one more time. Now they're going to try to balance. What I found is this. When they try to balance, the body will try to correct itself to get in that balanced position. So the skills that you're trying to teach, which it might be the front leg, being straight at contact, you know, where it's locked a little bit, where the back heel is off the ground. Those skills that you're talking about at the base level, they start to correct themselves. Because you know what happens is, and I stress this to volunteer coaches, you guys are professionals, you're dealing from a point of knowledge. But even with volunteers, you know, you got 12 kids, you're at a practice, how are you going to teach 12 kids to hit? Sometimes you're the only coach, right? Or you got two coaches. That's still not enough. Not when you're talking about 8-year-olds, 7-year-olds. So if you get them to freeze, and we get them to freeze, whether we're doing soft toss or overhand toss, you know, we go to one knee. I'm sure you do the same thing. Go to one knee. If you're ever doing overhand toss and you're throwing wiffle balls or incredible balls to eliminate fear and to develop that skill, because I think that's the first thing you need to do is eliminate the fear. And that's how you do it with the wiffle balls and all that. And then wiffle balls are fun and you can throw them easier. But if you're on one knee, you're at their level. So I think that's another aspect of the teaching. So those are some of the things that we may do. Keep it competitive, challenge them because they love the challenge. Keep it fun. Keep it going. Ask them questions, get their response, and get them to talk a little bit. Cause that's one thing they don't like to do, right? When you're young, even our older players don't like to say much, but the more you ask questions, if you've got baseball cards, I think that helps. So those are some of the things without boring you, because I know there's a lot of things you guys do, that are very good. And that's why I wanted to open it up, because a lot of times when we ask questions, when we give advice, that's when we're all learning. And then it's, you know, it spurts new things into the conversation. So that's just some of the notes that I'd written down. I know we didn't want to keep this too long. I don't have a problem. I've got all the time in the world, but I don't know if Justin, if you want to open it up and kind of.
Yeah. Anyone. I mean, all I could topic,
maybe, you know, throw some topics out or areas of discussion.
So I'll tell you, and I hope that everyone in this room agrees. I mean, a lot of the stuff that you were saying is pure gold. And frankly, I think reassuring to everybody, because it sounds like we're on the right track, because we always talk about these principles. And it's just extremely reassuring on my end, and maybe on everyone else's end, maybe they'd agree with me. I think they agree with me. Very reassuring, because a lot of the principles that you're talking about, which are gold, and to me, I believe what you're saying is the standard for youth development at this age bracket. It's extremely reassuring. I'll tell you what I gathered is the hitting portion, with starting with a wiffle ball bat, as simple as that sounds, I didn't even think about that. As far as like starting light and then working their way up. I thought that was a great.
If I could add two things, Justin, I apologize. Go ahead. You know, we have gone, you know, and this is just me. So I don't want to offend anybody. I'm not a big T-ball guy. Okay. Just to let you know, not in general, I'm not saying you don't use a T or, you know, but when you talk about starting kids off at T-ball, there's a problem with that. And I'll tell you what the problem is. Okay. One, when you're 5, 6 years old, 7 years old, what did most T-ball kids do? The experience I've had when they go up to hit off a tee, I remember this in the old days when I was a kid too, and it still happens today. A kid will go up there and he'll try to measure the bat to the ball, right, on the tee, and a coach will stop him sometimes, say, no, you got to get here in your stance. Well, in essence, the kid's correct. We do a lot of things in reverse, and I'm sure you've heard it. It comes from the old – matter of fact, I was just in Ukraine, talked to a lot of Russian coaches. It comes from the old Russian training in the Olympics. They work every skill backwards. They don't work a skill forwards. They start at the end result, right, and then they work back, and then they get to that point. Well, think about it. That's what that little T-ball kid's doing. He's measuring the bat at contact to see where he's got to go. Well, most of our drills, if we're going to do T-drills, that's where we start. We start at contact. And then we come back and then hit. Now, as you come back, that also helps you load a little bit, right? And get that rhythm where most kids start, you know, stiff and then go. Well, when you're loading and then going, now you're in that rhythm and timing, and there's a little footwork going on where you don't even have to tell them, you know, the front foot, everybody says, what do I do with that front foot? Do I lift it? Do I take a step? Do I, you know, do a Sammy Sosa back and forward? I mean, do I do a Cuban style where I bend my knee in a little bit? I mean, there's so many different techniques. But so we start at the tee. So what I get, but before tee ball, we start with a big bat. I mean, a big barrel. This is a very light bat. It's a Kinko bat. I mean, it's a feather, but yet it doesn't break. It won't break. And we start with the bigger balls possible because they can hit these. And now they're having some fun hitting it with a light object. The body's starting to understand that hand-eye coordination's developing. They're having fun because they're hitting the ball, because a lot of times on a tee, they miss, you know, and they try it again, then they miss again. And to me, I don't know about you, but that's not a whole lot of fun. But as soon as you start hitting it, and once in a while, you know, you got five-year-olds, they might even swing it one-handed. We're not worried about that. We're just getting that hand-eye coordination going. Obviously, if you can get them two-handed, fantastic at the beginning. And then what we'll do, because we do a lot of caravans and travel around, we've got a lot of parents. So we'll take our coaches, they'll set up stations, but the parents are involved in the stations. I realize you don't have the parents there, but we set the parents up and the parents are tossing the ball, whether it be underhand, depending on the skill level, or whether it be on one knee overhand. Because you got to remember, underhand's not the perfect way, right? I think you all agree, because of the fact, you know, even at the big league level, at the high school, college, not underhand's not the best way to do it. It's overhand because that's what they see the most. But at the younger levels, to eliminate fear, you got to start underhand, just like you do when you're playing catch a little bit, to get them to feel what it's like to catch. If you go overhand, there's that fear right away. Boy, the ball's coming hard on, you know, overhand. So we start with that, and then we go to the tee. You know, then we will develop more to the tee. The other thing I just wanted to leave you with, and I hope that you all do this, and I tell all our coaches, all even volunteer coaches, we all have bad days, tough days at work or whatever we're doing. And I believe you start practice enthusiastic and you end it enthusiastic. And along the way, you have to set the pace for those kids. If you're boring, if you're slow, if you're not, you know, excited and energetic, they're not going to be that way. And I think by the time you're done, I know by the time I finish practice, and I'm not saying just rah-rah, but by the time you finish practice, I'm exhausted. I'm talking about the young kids. You know, we get older, it could change a little bit. But with the young kids, man, I'm exhausted. And I know that, you know, if I'm exhausted, I gave everything I got. And I think that's how we all have to think when we're working with these young kids. Because if you think about it, when you were a young kid and you're in school, you couldn't wait for practice, right? Same thing. And, man, it was fun when, you know, the coach had a great time with us. And, yes, do we have to demand attention? And once in a while, they lose their attention. You know, you have to do different things. Like if you are talking to them, make sure the sun's not in their eyes. I think that's a simple skill to understand. You know, if they're on one knee, that's fine. If they're sitting down, they're probably not going to listen as much. I think we all understand that part. But if they're on one knee, I think they get, you know, they're a little bit more attentive, things like that. So that's what I try to throw at them as best I can. So that's how we start. We start with this.
Excellent. I'll tell you, it's excellent. I saw in a toy store the other day these big softball wiffle balls, and I was hesitant to buy them because I'm like, maybe smaller is better for hand-eye coordination, but it's actually okay to enforce confidence and build their confidence by letting them hit the ball.
Yeah.
That just kind of changed my thinking a little bit.
Justin, eventually, though, don't get me wrong here now, you know, we're building the confidence with this, and then we're also going to the smaller ball, right?
Right.
So maybe there's different stations, but on top of it, we're also teaching individuals, unfortunately, right? Especially nowadays coaching, and I don't know about you, but I love seeing a lot of young people in coaching, even at the big league level and the professional level. You know, you have to look at each individual, because – the individual that's the skilled kid, you know, right now, just because of what? Biology, right? This kid might be 6 months older, 5 months older. He might be more skilled. This skill is too easy, right? Well, then you might have to change that skill for them. Now that kid might be on a tee, or that kid you might be doing, you know, throwing wiffle balls and then challenge them a little bit, right? So if you got a kid, if you're on one knee and you're throwing wiffle balls and they're hitting, by the way, I don't know if you know this, but one of the most successful college coaches in the country, Gordy Gillespie, I don't know who's my age, but Gordy at the college level, on the road, that's all they used was wiffle balls for batting practice. And their team hit 320 all the time as a team. Did really well. If you're throwing wiffle balls and I see that the kid's hitting real well, now you got to challenge them, right? Because that's what they want. Now you got to throw some slow, some fast, some in, some out, because they got to feel the challenge, and also they got to feel a little bit of failure too, because now it gives them an incentive to try harder. So I don't know if that makes sense.
Pure gold. Coach, I'd love to open it up to anybody.
By the way, be curious. If we could do this, start with Ryan. Ryan, a little background, because I don't know anybody.
Yeah, so my name is Ryan.
At the beginning, sorry.
Yeah, I graduated from Springfield College 2 years ago, sport management. And I started working for Justin about like 9 months ago in September. I like teaching kids and working with kids. I guess like for me, I mean, I kind of like working more with the older kids, but I do like and enjoy what I do coaching younger kids as well. It taught me more about the game and just kind of how to approach it with the older kids. It's been a good ride here so far.
Awesome, Ryan. And by the way, I should have mentioned, I started off, just so you know, you got the old school, the new school. I'm kind of a mixture, especially with my podcast, but I started off in Mickey Owen Baseball School. We're talking about in the 70s. So Mickey Owen Baseball School was six fields, kids from all over the world, U.S. came. It was a baseball school. I went there as a kid, as a student, because I wanted to get better. That's who goes to a baseball school. From there, I became a counselor at 15, 16. I became an assistant instructor at 17. I was director of instructions at 21. You know, parents were paying that time $500 a week. Kids would stay there. That's where, and I was with, I think this is important. I was with guys that were, 30 years old, 35, 40, some of the best coaches in the country. And what I was able to do, I didn't get that opportunity to read books and see videos. I got hands-on training at the facilities because I was able to watch some of the best coaches, how they interacted with players, the drills they did. And that's where I was fortunate. And I said it earlier, because I've worked with that age group, we started up at the baseball school as young as 7 at that time. I felt that made me a much better teacher, instructor with the older players, much easier. I was going to jump to Mike. And Mike, I want to jump to, why? Because you remind me of a buddy of mine. I don't know if you guys ever saw, I know you've seen it, Moneyball, right? Moneyball, there's a guy.
Okay.
There's a guy on Moneyball, Ken Madlock.
He's Tony Danza?
That's right.
Was a boss.
Ken Madlock, you remember Grady Fusion, the scout that was fired by, who's the actor? Talking about the main actor.
Brad Pitt.
Remember the guy that with the slick back hair, Italian looking?
Yeah.
Fired by him? Ken Menlock and I coached on Team USA, the pro teams, the first time I met him. He's also the guy on the Geico commercial, the manager on that team. And you look like him. That's why I picked you next. I mean, it was like almost right. I thought I was looking at Ken.
Well, I'm one of the newer guys here at Just in Time. I'm a recently retired sergeant from the NYPD.
Oh, God bless you.
I've gotten back into coaching prior to joining the force. I did some coaching at the high school level. I'm a college graduate, and now I'm kind of like the private lessons guy here right now. I do we specialize in 5 to 9 year olds. But my workload is with the older kids, between 10 and 13, 14 years old, in that age group. And, I'm having a lot of fun with it. And it's, I'm glad that Justin gave me the opportunity to come aboard and just to have fun coaching kids again. It's awesome.
Awesome. That's great. Giving back, man, especially jumping with those 5 and 9 year olds. I do have to tell you, it's not easy, at a certain age to jump back into with 5, 9 year olds. The younger guys have a little easier time at it. But as you get older, it is a little tough. And I know I've had some times once in a while, because, once in a while, you kind of revert to, these kids better pay attention, but it is fun. I agree with you. It's a blast. Peter, what do you think?
Hey,
Hey, Pete, how you doing? Thanks for being on tonight. I mean, I'll tell you what, a lot of what you said, most of what you said resonated with me in regards to just remembering certain aspects growing up, you know, having a coach that was very energetic, very, very into what they do, right? You know, it definitely sets the tone, you know, so I'm constantly, you know, asking questions and, you know, I've been working with children for almost 20 years. So, nice. You know, it's never too late to learn new stuff and, you know, kind of work on your craft. You know, this is a craft that we do. And, you know, whether it's pursuing, you know, in a school or when you have children, right? You know, we have coaches that have children as well. And it definitely helps, you know, I have nephews. So definitely looking forward to working, you know, throwing the ball around with them. But back to coaching, I mean, it's something that I always enjoy doing. You know, I've had coaches in my life that, you know, showed, at least to me, taught me the game the right way. You know, I know that when you have someone that wants to really care, really help, you know, really show that they care, it definitely goes a long way. Back to what you were saying, you know, it's kind of building a foundation, you know, the talent, you know, the education aspect to it, the learning aspect to it, you know, it starts at the root when they're really young, you know? And I thought that was the most important. That was something I took away from that. A takeaway from what you said is, you know, building the foundation from a young age, at a young age, you know, and then everything else as they get older, you know, giving the right coaching and parenting, because that's important too, is definitely helpful.
Yeah.
So thank you.
And thank you. And that reminds me, you know, things we forget sometimes, little things. I forget them too, man. But, you know, when they come, you know, and I know a lot of times you may not have a full team there. It could be 5-6 kids you're working with as a group. But, you know, a lot of times, you know, just remembering their names, you know, and it's not easy for me to remember names. I gotta kind of either write things down, but I remember, I mean, put it in your life. I remember, and I'll use a quick story. I remember, Jim Lefebvre was manager of the Cubs. And prior to that, I've known him for a long time, but when I first met him, you know, I was young, and a year later, I'm at a convention. He's walking down the convention and he stops me and says, "Hey Pete, how you doing?" You know, That made me feel so good that a guy remembered my name a year later. So you can imagine what little kids, you know, when every time, you know, when they come to practice, high five, "Hey Joe, what's up? How you doing? Ready for practice?" This and that. You know, I think that goes a long ways. The other thing is I try to begin always the practice after some type of warm-ups. And warm-ups, again, I use the tennis ball, throw it up in the air because that really gets them going. The other thing I'll do is, and I should have mentioned this, is you know how some coaches do they do the lines and then they'll like jog and then come back. I do that too because that's fun. I'll jog, then jog backwards, then I might do shuffles. But one thing they always have on is their glove. I think we fail sometimes to remember this. Why the glove? Think about it. I throw right-handed, I write right-handed, unless you're ambidextrous. You do everything right-handed. Then you ask them to catch a ball, put a heavy glove on, catch a ball, and they've never used that left hand all day. So I get them, and I'll do two things. I'll put a glove on them. I'll put a ball in the glove. Sometimes I put a ball in their hand and a ball in the glove, excuse me, a glove in their hand. And I do our warm-ups with that. And the other thing is building strength too, because you've got that. If you're doing strides for some reason with your hands up, you're building strength. But I'll incorporate in the warm-ups. I don't do your traditional warm-ups. I'll incorporate skills. So an example would be the reason I'll do shuffles and throws. So I'll have the little guys ready to go and the first line will go and I'll go, okay, shuffle twice, then throw, shuffle twice and throw. They don't have a baseball that time. And what they're doing is they're going through the motion, right? As they're shuffling down the line, I'll have them swing and run. So now we're working on swinging. I incorporate skills. I don't toss a ball up as they're running, as we talked about earlier. So I incorporate the skills. The other thing I do as a warm-up for about a minute, minute and a half, I'll get them all in a ready position, right? But I do it fast, and they just got to watch me. I get them a ready position. I say, ready position. Then I'll go throwing position, and we've gone through it a little bit. I've gone through slow where they got to follow me, and I make them repeat it. I know this isn't easy, but I'll say, ready position. They yell ready position. Why do I have them yell that? Because that keeps them busy, and it keeps them remembering that's the ready position, right, before somebody hit or the pitcher throws the ball. So I'll go ready position. Then I'll go fielding position. They get into fielding position. I'll go throwing position. I'll go throwing. I say throw, they'll throw. Hitting position, swing, and then they'll freeze at the swing. Then I'll go hitting position, contact. So I'll take all the different skills. I'll even say slide where they got to go on the ground and go into a sliding position. And then as we're doing this, first day easy, next day a little easier or a little harder, I'll incorporate to the point where I'll mix it all up. I'll go throwing position, hitting position, swing, throwing position, throw, fielding position, throw. What am I doing? I'm warming up the body because you can't tell me. When I go to a fielding position, I'm stretching my legs out. When I go start to throw, I'm warming up the upper body, right? Even though they're not throwing an object. But I'm working on the skills as well as I'm working on the warm-up at the same time. So I'll change the warm-ups around. I'll do different things. Do I spend a lot of time on it? No. A minute and a half, 2 minutes. Once in a while, I'll get a kid that's really good, and I'll get them to do it. So they'll lead the group. If I'm trying to demonstrate, I'll demonstrate sometimes because I think that, you know, we might do it better by showing it to them. But if I got a kid that's throwing pretty good, I'll have him demonstrate to the group, and he'll throw to another player or to me. Why do I do that? Because they pay attention more to their guys than they will us. I mean, when they see their buddy up there, boom, eyes, and you could try it. Eyes go right on them, man. Everybody's looking. And sometimes when the coach is doing it, sometimes they're not paying attention all the time. So as you guys are talking, it spurts some of the new, you know, other things that I'm doing. That's why I appreciate what, you know, what you're saying. John, how about you?
Hey, Pete, how you doing? Thanks again for coming on. So I started up with Justin around like October, November. I am actually a sixth grade math teacher, and I coach with Justin after work. And then I come home to two of my own, a four-year-old and a 10-month-old. So I get what you're saying about that word exhaustion, but it's a good exhaustion. Here's one of them right here. It's awesome, man. And I actually love that the last thing you just said about the warm-up drills. And, you know, I know a couple of the guys, you know, we always like to get the kids moving before practice just to kind of get, you know, like you said, the upper body, lower body, you know, working and moving. But the idea of having the glove on makes a ton of sense. And definitely during my next group class, I'm going to definitely try that out because I could just see a couple, even like you said, with the side shuffles, just have the glove on and that mimics, you know, stepping and throwing. So just stuff like that is awesome. And I appreciate that. So, Definitely going to use that with my next group for sure. So thank you.
You know, and John, the more you do that stuff, you know, especially the skill work inside the warmups, the better they get because they're doing the skill without actually having to worry about a ball coming at them or a bat, you know, hitting a ball. The other part is, you know, and I know you guys do this. I mean, as a warmup, I never have them run around the field as a warmup. To me, that's a waste of time. And I think time's an essence and it's not a lot of fun. And I, you know, and the reason I know that is because when they run around the field, I don't see any coaches running with them because we all know that's kind of boring. But if we do that, I always have the glove on, but I'd rather they run the bases, right? Cause now you're learning the bases and they really maybe aren't sure how to run the bases. So I'll set up cones. And if I don't have cones, I'll get water bottles and I'll put one before the base at second base, you know, where they round it. Then I'll put another one afterwards so they stay inside that so they're not making a big turn. I'll do the same thing at second, same thing at third, and then I'll incorporate a game. Now, I don't know if you can do this because of the age group, depends on the skill level, but I'll give the pitcher the ball, and normally I'll throw pitcher to catcher to third, third to second to short to first back home, back to the pitcher. It doesn't have to be that way. As long as everybody touches the ball once. And what I'll do is I'll start runners on at home. Right. And the kids love this because they start at home. So I got, you know, a group at home and a group on the field. And now the first runner runs and they're in the infield is throwing the ball around. And whoever, if they get the ball to the pitcher first, before the runner gets home, they get a point. If the runners get home, they get a point. So now I'll incorporate that. Now, before I do that, I'll use a stopwatch and let the guys throw the ball around and see what their time is, because I don't want to add the runner yet because, you know, there's more skill involved in that and they got to be careful they don't hit the guy. But I'll add a stopwatch to see how long it takes. And unfortunately, I hate to say this, once in a while I lie, okay, because, you know, I want it to keep competitive. So, you know, and I'll make sure that it's close. But a lot of times, you know, if one team is losing – too much, I'll make sure they win because I want to give them some confidence. So, because they're not going to ask, hey, coach, can I see the stopwatch? You know, 39 years, I've never had anybody ask that. But so once in a while, I might say, hey, 11.5 beat by, you know, 0.1 seconds. Great job, guys. And maybe they lost by that. But once in a while, I'll throw that in there again for motivation. Where are we at here? Brett. And Justin, let me know when the time's up. I know we're going maybe too long.
Where's yours? I mean, this is gold.
Right.
Yeah, thanks again, Coach, for talking to us.
Thank you.
It's all gold. But I started working with Justin Time in February, and I've just been playing overseas the past, like, 6 years. Been lucky.
Where?
Australia, Sweden, and Germany as well.
Nice.
And I'm lucky enough to have the dual passport with GB. So I've been – that was my in for overseas. So it's been – I've been super fortunate.
Liam Carroll – or no, was it Liam? Yeah, right?
Yeah, Liam. He stepped down.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, so we have a new coach for this tournament coming up.
Cool. Nice. Awesome. Alex.
Hey, Coach. Great talking to you. Thanks for coming on, like all the other guys already mentioned. I started with Justin early this year, so I've been with him for about 6 months now. I'm a finance guy by trade, but I've been around the game of baseball pretty much my entire life, from playing, and then my biggest connection to baseball is I'm an umpire. I've been umpiring for close to 20 years now, all the way up to collegiate level. So, you know, I've been around that for the longest time. I'm a father of two boys. So, you know, that the parental side of me comes out more than the instructional side a lot of the times. but I have to keep it not so personal. But my biggest thing, and I think this is why I'm usually working with the smaller guys and girls. Actually, have we had any girls yet? I don't think so. Actually we have with Bedford
all the time.
Yeah. So, it's because I'm very empathetic. So, you know, I try to build a relationship with these kids, you know, not as a parental figure, but just as a friend sometimes, and just, you know, be the fun guy. You know, a lot of these kids, they got school, and then they, you know, who knows what's going on at home. Sometimes they look towards these baseball practices as their fun time. So, you know, we try to always keep it fun, try to keep it upbeat. You know, we have to keep structure sometimes as well. But for the most part, I like to really – but one of the things that you've said that I think is one of my biggest points is, you know, get into their eye level. That's one of the things I've always stressed. I never like to tower over somebody. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm over 6 feet tall, not as tall as Brett. But I don't like
barely,
to tower
over
kids.
Over 6 feet.
Hey, 6'1". Don't cut me short. Hey. Keep quiet. You had your time, 5'10". I think one of the biggest things as a coach, and I've stressed this to everybody on this call, is to never tower over anybody, because it just builds this, like, overbearing individual that these kids will never, you know, they'll fear you more than they'll listen to you. So, you know, that's one of the things, and I really appreciate the glove thing during the, like John had mentioned before, I'm one of those guys where it's like, all right, you know, we're going to warm up. We're going to do some shuffles. We keep it fun. But the one thing I always tell them is, you know, you don't need your gloves right now. And I think what you mentioned before is a game changer for me. And I'm definitely going to switch that up. And it makes so much sense. And, it, you know, that's how valuable sometimes these calls are, because these little things that we would never think of.
Yeah. And don't forget the ball, right? Because gripping the ball is not easy for them. So the more they have it in their hand, the more comfortable it becomes.
Yep, for sure. And, it's just I'm all about keeping it fun and also just teaching these kids, and it's very rewarding when you see them succeed. It makes you successful. But before I let you go, I did want to ask you a couple questions, if I may.
Sure.
The one question I have for you, and it's more on the personal coaching side, you know, obviously you've worked with a lot of individuals, a lot of coaches, a lot of pro players. I wanted to ask you has there ever been a player or two that you had a feeling about that maybe others were skeptical about that you ended up being right about? And why did you have that feeling?
Well, that's a good question, man. At any level, does it matter the level?
I mean, preferably it'd be cool if it was a pro that we all kind of knew or heard about, but yeah, pretty much, or at any level, like one of those kids where you're like, I got a feeling about this kid. Maybe the scouts weren't so high on him, but all of a sudden he just turned out great. And what was it about him that you personally saw?
Absolutely. Boy, I think I can think of a few, and they may not big names. I mean, with Team USA, obviously we had a lot of talent, you know, David Ross, you know, was one of our players, and, you know, here in Chicago, I'm in Chicago. So, you know, by the way, Yankees, Cubs, they need to regroup. They're having all kinds of troubles right now. So, you know, it's kind of similar. They're struggling, and they were, you know, but that's another story. I could think of – I was at a tryout for independent ball. I put independent teams together for many years, for like 10 years. And that was a challenge. It was fun because you get to, you know, put the whole team together and pick it and do the scouting and all that stuff. But we did it in the 90s, so we didn't have the technology of today. I had a young man I could think of both. One that I did pick and one that I didn't that went on. One young man, I was at a tryout and in Florida for an independent league. And I'm watching the players and finally we have a draft. Well, there's a left-handed pitcher threw really well. To me, it was a no-brainer. And if you could believe this one, our club, I had a tough choice because our club was really strong in the pitching part, but you never have enough pitching, right? They always say you never have enough pitching. But we didn't have a second baseman, and I didn't have a person you can put at second base that might have been another infielder. So I saw this Latin kid that was doing really well, and I had done my homework ahead of time. I talked to him. I wanted to get the feeling of, you know, what kind of person he was. I asked a lot of questions. So then the tryout happened, and one particular ball he hit, he didn't hustle. And one of the scouts I know, professional scouts, he was really upset at the guy, and he chewed him out and let him know, you know, hey, you're a pro tryout. You got to hustle everywhere. Okay, fine. Well, I end up drafting the guy as my number one pick. You know, so obviously people are thinking, you know, especially the scout. By the way, the scout came to me later and said, Pete, what are you, nuts? Why would you even take that kid? That was exactly his comments. And I said, Mel, I go, man, I talked to this kid. You know, everybody makes mistakes. This kid's a good kid. I mean, he comes from a good background. I could just tell by talking to him, you know, how professional he was, how he talked to you. You know, you just know, you have that feeling. You can't explain it all. Well, make a long story short, he ended up being the MVP of the league. Not only as a player, but as a class act. Went on to, even with his family, and he played pro ball already, so he had played some minor league baseball. That was one. But then on the flip side, I was also at a kid who called me one day and he said, I'd love to play for you guys. And I said, well, I'm looking for a catcher. Can you come out today to Schaumburg? Because we need to make a decision. He said, coach, one thing. He said, I've got a team that offered me a contract and they want me to sign today. And I told him straight up, most people I don't think would have said this. I said, but listen, I get it. You know, I don't want you to lose that opportunity. You know, if you think that, you know, you need to go with that club and because you don't want to lose that chance, because I can't guarantee a spot till I see you. I got to work you out, you know, and then we got to talk a little bit. And, you know, he ended up signing. Well, he ended up rookie of the year in that league. He signed with that other team. So I've had, you know, the failures and I've had some successes. Those are small ones. And I think a lot of times I'm big on personality. I'm big on, you know, how you speak, how you relate to somebody. I think that's no different in jobs. You know, I take teams around the world. When I look for a coach, yes, you want coaches that are skilled, right, that are good at what they do, but I'm looking at personality first. I'm looking at how they communicate. I don't, you know, the other stuff we can teach. So that's what I'm looking for, and that's what I think I look for in anybody. Chicago, general manager, oh boy, I think I'm getting old. Cubs manager won the World Series, GM. You guys all know him. He won with Boston, too.
Oh, yep. The young guy.
Yeah, Theo Epstein. I remember the Chicago Tribune. The one thing he said, and he stuck to this, and the Tribune, he said, we sign guys, I don't care if they're number one picks, we'll skip a guy, we'll go to the second guy if that player doesn't have character. If he's not a quality individual, quality person, we're not signing them. And I believe in that also because the teams I had in independent ball, they weren't the most talented teams, but they were the best teams together. And when you talk about chemistry, you know, everybody could talk about chemistry all day and mention the word, but to me, chemistry is people who care about each other, who are respectful, who enjoy being around each other. And that's the type of guys I look for in a club as you're building it later. Now, that's why I think teaching those skills as kids get older is very important. I understand, you know, 5-6-year-olds that you just, you know, you got to get them going. But as you start to get to 11, 12, 13, 14, teaching them how to be a teammate, you know, how to deal with failure, as you all know, that's the toughest part. You know, that those are important things that are going to build a better club along the way, as a better individual. So we're, you know, and you hear this cliche, right? We're building life skills, and we really are. I was lucky. My parents, I think that's where I got it from, right? I mean, my parents taught me life skills, even though they came from Italy. You know, but they came through a rough time. They understood tough times, and they taught me how to respect people, how to treat people individually. And I could tell you, today, tomorrow, or any other day, I treat everybody the same, the best I can. I don't care what level you're at. I'm always trying to communicate with everybody. And that's whether I'm at a hotel or whether I'm at somewhere else around, you know, around the world. I always try to, you know, treat people with respect the way you want to be treated. So it's kind of long-winded, but that was a little bit of an answer.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
All right. We got one more, right? What do we got? What did I miss? Did he go?
Coach Josh had to quickly leave.
Okay. No problem.
He sends his regards and greatly appreciates you being here.
Hey, I thank you guys for being here. I really do.
So all I could say is, you know, just a big thank you. And I speak for everybody in here. You see why you are who you are, meaning you, Coach Caliendo, you know, tip of the spear. You're the tip of the spear.
And I appreciate it, guy. And you, maybe you can, you know, if you want, give everybody my email, feel free to communicate anytime. If I can help in any way, you know, I've always said, I'll give you an example real quick before I end. With parents, you know, parents are big, like when they're going to games, and parents, you know how they like to talk a lot and communicate too much during the game, as coaches do sometimes, because if we tell kids too much during games what to do as they're trying to do it, we're just messing them up. Let them do it, and then work on it later if they make some mistakes. There's nothing wrong with when they come to the dugout. I think you all know that, to talk to them, ask them some questions, why they did something, and let them respond. But I think during the game, we got to let them play as much as possible. Oh, by the way, I'm big on starting 9, 10, 11 years old in games, making decisions. I'm huge on that. I want them to make mistakes. I let them realize mistakes are part of the game. That's how you learn. So when they're on the bases and the ball's hit in front of them, I don't care if they're 10 years old. I tell my 10-year-olds, you're on your own, okay? You make that choice if you're going to go to the next base. There's going to be coaches that are going to go, whoa. They're not learning that way. I think they are, because the more they have that ability to do that, the more they understand, you know, because you might ask them, why'd you make that decision go to third? They might tell you, you know, and okay, that's, but learn from that. So I'm big on that. I'm also big on, I don't give the outs. I never tell young kids how many outs there are on the bases. Always do what? Always ask them all the time. And it works 100%, because, you know, coaches complain, well, they don't know the outs. Well, they don't know the outs because you're telling them all the time, right? They don't have to know them. But if you, and it's fun too, I'll do it in practice. You know, a kid comes to third base, I go say, hey, Ray, how many outs? They'll go, 2 outs, coach. I go, you sure? He goes, yeah. I said, okay, good luck. You know, and I'll have some fun and I'll smile, right? Because sometimes they'll make a mistake on it, and that's okay. You got to have some fun. They have a blast. What happens is, if you're at first base and you're always asking them what, you know, what the outs are, by the time they get the first, eventually they're telling you the outs because they don't want to hear the question, right? They're going to coach one out. As you get older, college guys have done this. As you get older, you may not tell them the outs, but the guys have to show it on the bases. Again, that keeps them in the game. So those are other things I use with young kids. I'm always trying to get them to learn on their own as best as possible. I think that eliminates fear. But to the parents, real quick, and the reason I said my email, when parents don't pay, are always doing that kind of stuff. I have a good friend, Dr. Harrison. It's called Slow the Game Down. He passed away, but his son Ryan runs the program, Vision Program. Been doing it since the 70s. He had an article in ESPN, or one of the major articles, about why you should not talk to players on the field. What, like, example, you know, as they're hitting, you know, hey, Johnny, do this. Hey, do that, you know, or spread your feet or grip this. Because right away when you're doing that, it blocks the ability for them to concentrate and the ability to see the baseball. And what I do is I don't tell the parents that. I give them the article. I email it to them. Read this article. I know you love your kids, but you're actually doing more harm. I wish you'd read the article so you understand why, and I think we'll all get better at it.
So, Coach Pete, just real quick, I did a 13U game the other day. This is so funny you say that. I did a 13U game. There was a kid at bat. His first at bat, the father was literally like right behind the dugout just screaming, you know, get closer to the plate, step back, get closer. The whole first at bat, the second at bat, the father did it again. He's like, you know, choke up on the bat. He finally turned and said, Dad, I can't hit if I'm listening.
Smart kid. And by the way, Mike, I had a high school coach on a trip, on a Dominican trip. Good guy. Did the same thing with his kid. We were in the Dominican Republic, constantly on him. And I didn't realize this because I didn't know he did that, you know, back home. And then I had to sit him down at the hotel, you know, and talk to him and say, you know, you're just hurting your kid doing that. I think you understand it. You mean well, but we all know it really doesn't work. You know, it's just a matter. And that's why educating parents, to me, is so important, because they want to know, and you might as well make them part of the education, because that'll help their kids. Because eventually they're going to tell their kids something else when they go home. If you can get them on the same page a little bit, they're just going to be more helpful. So
now, whenever I coach, I always tell the parents, I'm like, you gotta, you know, there's a thing, it's coaches coach, you know, parents cheer and players play. You know, I mean, that's the role that each and every one of us has to maintain. You know, we got to stay in our lane and focus on that, and giving cues to players in the middle of games. I'm not big on that at all. You know, I'll say maybe something really like, you know, balance or something like that, but I wouldn't get into get your hands back, get your foot down, all that stuff. That's too much for them once they get into the box. I tell them all the time, I'm like, guys or girls, once you get in that box, your training is going to take over. What we did on the practice field, what we did in the cage all winter, and then it's time to come out and play the games, that's, you know, that's all going to come out. And if we got to make some adjustments after that, you know, after the game or the next practice, that's when we'll make those adjustments. We can't do it real time in the game like that. It's gotta, you know, we gotta make an assessment, and then we'll take it from there and we'll get better. And that's what it's all about.
Absolutely. Perfect. Good, Justin.
Well, Coach, thank you so much. And, you know, just truly, you're a complete gem. And I'm speaking for everybody here. This was phenomenal. So it's exactly what I thought it would be. And it's really reassuring to me that I feel like we're on the right track here for what we're doing. And we're doing things right over here. Obviously, we have a lot to learn, and this is why we do these types of events, meaning these bringing in great people like yourself. But we're on the right track. So who better than you? Thank you very much.
Awesome. Thanks, everybody. I appreciate it. Good luck
this
year.
Thank you.
Bye, man.
Yeah, thank you, Peter.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Coach, thank you very much.
Hey, guys.
This has been Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Listen online at baseballoutsidethebox.com and subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and all major podcast outlets. Join the conversation on Facebook and Twitter. Get all of our podcasts now at lineupmedia.fm.